Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Welcome once again to Connecting Faith. Good to have you along. I'm Neil Stavem. I always appreciate the opportunity to get together with you. And Ted Ross at the controls. And Ted, you had a, anniversary celebration?
Well,
right?
Today. Thank you. 19
right.
years for my wife and I today. Grateful and blessed.
Yeah, way to go. And you had a Mother's Day gathering, right?
So yeah, we always have the double whammy celebration, you know,
okay.
right there. So
okay, yeah. Well, happy Mother's Day to you. If hopefully you had a wonderful weekend, Mom. We appreciate you, and always love to have the opportunity to connect with you in a variety of ways here. And today's conversation, we're going to talk a little bit about finances. It's something that we need to always keep focused on. It's an important part and a big part of our life. Jesus had a lot to say about money and stewardship, and so we'll get some good biblical perspective on that as well. Should mention, though, Ted, we're in the middle of our third annual Faith Radio Writers Contest.
And the response keeps getting bigger and bigger every
That's
year,
exciting.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah. In fact, this year we've added a new element where you can actually go online and read the submissions and vote for the ones that you the one you think is the best.
Anybody can vote, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't have to be, I guess you have to read probably to be able to do it, but, so if you have a submission, you can do that, and of course deadline's coming up soon on that, but the voting I think goes through the end of the month. So
very good. So, yeah, the 17th is the final day, you said.
Yeah, for submission, I think.
Okay.
So yeah,
good.
Norwegian Independence Day.
Hey,
so if you want to,
the
theme is on grace. We've got details online at myfaithradio.com. Check it out, myfaithradio.com, the Writers Contest.
So if somebody writes a story about Norwegian Independence Day, is bonus points?
I would think that would... I'd vote for that one, certainly.
Okay.
So, right. Well, we're looking forward to our conversation today. By the way, Carissa's at the phones, and we invite you to give her a call and get queued up. You have the money questions today because we're talking with a certified financial planner. He's a past chairman of Kingdom Advisors. He's founding board member there. He's been talking and helping people with the finances and planning for a number of years. Ken Franke is the founder and president of Kenneth Franke & Company, speaker and writer, has presented the biblical principles of finances on radio for about 30 years now. In fact, goes back, I think, Ken, back when Larry Burkett first became ill, right? You started doing the show with Steve Moore, right?
Well, probably went back before that. I've been had done work with Moody for probably since the middle 1980s, and then met Larry in the late 80s and did a little radio with him and worked on a few projects. But it wasn't until and did some radio with them. But it wasn't until the 2000s, when Larry really fell ill from congestive heart failure, that I got to spend maybe half the time doing programming for them. And that was one of the special privileges of my life, I'd have to say, knowing Larry and Steve and that whole crew.
We so appreciate the opportunity to connect with you from time to time. And Ken, again, a certified financial planner, advisor, and will help us with our questions about the economy and our personal economies particularly. There's maybe not a lot we can do about the national economy, but our own, we want to be good stewards and have a biblical understanding of that. So phone lines are open right now. If you have a question, it's 877-933-2484, whether it's talking about your retirement account, or if it's paying off mortgages, or whatever it might be, we'll weigh in. 877-933-2484. Ken Franke with us today. Let's start, Ken, a little bit about the Dow up over 18,000. I just talking before the show. I remember, when it broke 10,000, I thought, man, that is really something. Is that a sign that the economy has recovered to see that up over 18,000? What does that really mean?
Yeah, Neil, that's a really good question. A lot of people are trying to figure that one out. I will tell you this, that, the economy has been sort of in muddling along, is a good way to say it, about 2.2% return since the recession ended. That's way below what we normally would expect to see at 3.5% or 4%, per year economic growth. So the economy certainly hasn't recovered to the levels that we would have expected in the past. And if you look at different segments of the economy, we know we have high unemployment still, and You know, the Federal Reserve is still stepping on the gas to stimulate the economy with the low interest rates and that type of thing. But interestingly enough, when it comes to stock, the stock market, when you look back historically, the sweet spot where you get the most return on average over the long term is when the economy is producing only about 2% growth. And so we've been in a sweet spot for the market for some time now. And people say, well, how can that be if the economy's not growing? Well, the stock market is made up of businesses. And the businesses, you know, we always think, well, the economy's doing well, they must be doing well. And there's a lot of truth in that. But when the economy isn't doing well, there's less wage pressure. That's not good news for families, but there's less wage pressure. When high employment's high, people want to keep their jobs. And they tend to increase their productivity, both through the workers themselves and training and through technology. So company profitability has been riding along year after year at record income levels. And that's one reason, with low interest rates, tremendous profitability, the stock market's just doing great, even though we only have 2% economic growth.
You know, have we heard, maybe just to expand on that a little bit, what are the indicators of a healthy economy? Is it jobs? Is it you know, manufacturing? Or, and maybe have those things changed over the years in terms of those indicators?
Well, you know, the things that the Federal Reserve is charged with doing kind of give us some insight into that. One, they're charged with keeping a stable dollar. They're charged with keeping employment reasonable and kind of on the economy on track. And so they monitor a lot of different indicators, from GDP to unemployment to interest rates, try to keep that going along. But if they feel that employment is really healthy, they feel that interest rates are at the right level for people to borrow money and be able to either build businesses or buy homes, they look at those kinds of things because they're the ones that directly impact our pocketbooks and voters' pocketbooks. So those are probably the key things. When they look at the monthly reports about GDP, the gross domestic product, which essentially measures our economic growth, and they look at a lot of other factors, they look at all of those factors. But the bottom line is, when you listen to Fed Chairwoman Yellen, Janet Yellen, she will tell you that they're looking at the job situation, not only the number of people employed, because right now the jobless rate has dropped down to about 5.4%. It hasn't been that low since 2007. But they also look at the quality of jobs. And, you know, Neil, as you know, just from talking to friends, a lot of jobs are being created in the service industries, but not necessarily high-paying jobs. And they look at the number of people who have stopped looking for a job because there isn't something out there. So when you look at all those factors, the economy still is muddling along. We're creating some jobs, not necessarily high-paying jobs. But how you feel about this economy, to go back to the first thing you mentioned, is really dependent on where you're sitting in this, in your own personal circumstances. Like you said, you know, we can't control the economy and the big picture, but we certainly have control of our individual pictures. And people are getting out of debt. They're adjusting to a different economy that we're in now. But it depends on whether you're one of those that's been out of work for 5 years and still looking. It's one of those getting ready for retirement, but you're getting almost nothing on the savings that you've accumulated, and so you're thinking about what to do about that. Or, you know, you're in the banking industry and you're just reaping the benefits of the Federal Reserve largesse, you know, the upper 1% of the income earners are doing phenomenally. So it depends where you are in the economic spectrum and how you feel about the recovery.
Ken Franke's my guest today. We're talking about finances, the economy, and some financial planning advice. And we welcome your call at 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. And we'll get to those calls here in a moment or two. I was interested, Ken. I know that we've heard, when it comes to stock market in particular, that companies are maybe looking more short-term in terms of, you know, finding short-term returns for their investors. So are all those things, I mean, we're always told that we need to have the long-term approach when it comes to investment, but are businesses and companies doing the same thing?
Well, that's a great question. Now, if you're Warren Buffett, yeah, you are. You're not worried about the short term, and you're looking at the long term, and you're buying investments that may not pan out for a few years. You know, but our culture is such that the short term is all most people pay attention to. I mean, you just look at, you know, I understand college students. We have grandchildren in college, but, you know, college students are less interested in emailing because it takes too long. So they want to text or tweet or something like that. So our attention spans are definitely getting shorter. You just have to watch television and you see these segments that if they last more than 30 seconds or a minute, you know, people quickly lose interest. So companies are the same way, by and large, because their shareholders want something right now. They want to know that they're getting earnings, either income coming in from that company or that the stock value is going up, and they don't have a lot of patience with the long term. There are exceptions, as I said, but our culture is such that the short term is what we all are interested in.
Well, coming up in a moment, we'll talk about, speaking of college, talk about a question about investing money for a college fund. We'll get to that. Also, someone has a question about an inheritance check, what to do with that. We'll get insights and perspective from Ken Franke. Ken's the founder and president of Kenneth Franke & Company, speaker, writer, and presented biblical principles on finances and radio since 1986. Certified financial planner. He's a member of the Financial Planning Association, and he's also a founding board member and past chairman of Kingdom Advisors. Good enough to join us today, and we're going to get some good insights in just a moment. And we'll answer your financial investment questions as well at 877-933-2484. It's 877-933-2484. Money won't buy you happiness, but according to researchers, it will pay the salary of the researchers to find out what it really will do for you. Ken Franke is a certified financial planner and a member of the Financial Planning Association, and he is a past chairman of Kingdom Advisors. He's a writer and advisor and a radio host, and we're honored to have him with us today as we talk finances. 877-933-2484 is the phone number. Or if you want to drop us a note, you can go to myfaithradio.com and then click on our show page, Connecting Faith, and there's an email link there. So if you want to just submit your question that way, you're welcome to do that. So, Ken, we got a call from Patty in Waverly, Iowa, and she's wondering what to do with an inheritance check from her mom's estate. She's in her 60s, hasn't put the check in the bank yet. Just wondering if you could give her some advice, her and her husband advice, and should they invest it? What should they do with that? Don't know how much it is, but... What would be your general recommendation?
Well, you know, I would say this to Patty and to anyone, you know, in a similar situation. You know, sometimes you get a check that just changes everything, and other times you get a check that can be, you know, helpful, and if you make some wise decisions, can have a real impact on your finances. And the first things that I look at is I like to always know someone's overall situation. Not the ages are one thing, but how long they plan to work, you know, what are their sources of income going to be as they go along forward, and do they have any consumer credit? And the first thing I would consider doing when I would get a check of something like that is to pay off credit cards, that type of thing. If you have a mortgage remaining and there's enough in there to that, you want to apply it to that. But, you know, you also want to make sure you still have an emergency fund. And then if you can't pay your mortgage off and have an emergency fund, I'd pay off less of my mortgage and have an emergency fund, because as long as you can make those mortgage payments, they're not going to be the thing that throws you off kilter, but not having an emergency fund for something that comes up. So I'd pay off my credit cards, pay as much of the mortgage down as I could, make sure I had an emergency fund. And then I would take a portion of that and add that, if you have already investment assets, and add some of that to that. But it's knowing the big picture. Where are you going? What your sources of income are going to be? Social Security, pension, that type of thing, and how much I may need for my investments. All of that goes into the mix in trying to make the best decision.
Tell me about, you know, paying off mortgage. That's, you know, you hear various perspectives on that because, you know, interest rates are so low, so and you do get some tax credit on that. So is it important, I mean, to get that paid off as you approach retirement?
Yeah, Neil, that's a great question. We get that asked a lot. I think there are three components to the answer to that, and it's going to be different for a lot of different people. You know, one of them is the mechanical one. Yeah, am I better off carrying a, you know, 2.5, 3% mortgage and paying that off because it's well within my means? Or if it's towards the end of it, where almost all of it is principal and little interest, you know, that's another factor. But the mechanical part is one of it, one part of it. Another is the spiritual part of it. You know, we know that we're encouraged not to be encumbered by worldly things, and we know that the borrower is the servant of the lender. So there's a spiritual aspect. What do we think God is doing, you know, with us and through us, and how does a mortgage impact that? And the third thing is the emotional part of it. I mean, I've known people. My wife's a great example. No debt. You know, she just doesn't want to think about those kinds of things. And other people are comfortable having a certain amount of debt. So you have to look at the mechanical part of it. What is the real bottom line, mechanically, dollar-wise? Look at the spiritual aspect of it. What do we believe God would have us do? And then the third thing is the emotional. What is my own makeup? I mean, it'd be very different from my neighbor. We may have identical financial situations, but we prefer not to have debt, and they're very comfortable with debt and can handle it.
And that's okay, right? We don't have to apply sort of some other principles. I mean, if it's important to us to get that paid off, that's a good thing, then, right?
Absolutely. And you know, the other thing is, I mean, I've met people in all walks of life who've in all levels of success, and very successful people. That's all they've known: mortgage on the home, mortgage on the business. And we've talked about that. And then when they finally pay them off, they say to me very often, you know, if I had known the peace of mind I would have now, I would have done this sooner. And I don't think people are fully cognizant of the peace of mind of not having debt. The Bible makes it clear that there's peace of mind in that. But, you know, we live in a world that, especially since the Second World War, that has encouraged us to take on ever-increasing levels of debt for cars and homes and appliances and whatever else we need. And the opposite of not having debt, incredible peace of mind. And, you know, in this day and age, you and I have talked about this in past times, you know, there are many people that are not believers, worried about their finances. And if we have that peace of mind and having a margin, you know, financial margin, not having a mortgage and all those things, and we have peace of mind as a result of those things, of applying God's principles, we may be the person who gets to share with them why we do the things that we do and reveal to them what God has revealed to us about our Savior.
Do you encounter that as you over the years that people come to you for financial planning advice, that debt is maybe it's the big issue that really drives everything else or prohibits maybe everything else that they'd like to do?
Well, it can be. You know, I would say that as a culture, Christians, I think for many, many decades, bought into the same perspective that everyone else did, that we could grow prosperous through borrowing. And if you use borrowed money wisely, there's certainly, you know, some truth in that. But like everything else, we take something that can be good and distort it. And so most people distorted it. And, of course, the pinnacle of that was in, you know, 2006, in the early 2000s, when people were being able to, you know, buy zero-down mortgages, deferring the interest rates and all the – I mean, the lending standards became so loose that it was encouraging people that had no business borrowing money to buy a home to buy a home. And we're doing that with cars now, too, with the low-quality loans on automobiles and trucks. But when you get to that point, more and more people are harmed by borrowing money than those that are going to benefit and prosper from using it wisely.
Ken Franke is my guest today, talking financial advice, and we give you the opportunity to ask questions. It's 877-933-2484, and you're welcome to let us know what you're thinking about. 877-93-FAITH. Nancy's listening in Fergus Falls and says, what's the best way to invest money for our daughter's college fund? She's 12 years old now, and they'd like to invest more than just the minimum. What would you say?
Well, you know, I would tell Nancy and anyone like that to first of all, think about where they may go to school. If they're going to go to in-school, in-state rather, they may have some programs where that are very attractive. If they are able to, you know, forecast where that may be. They're in school programs, state programs in many states that allow you to invest and grow a tax deferred and then have it used specifically for those purposes. There are also statewide programs that allow you to invest 529 plans in that state program, but it can, that money is transferable and usable in other states as well. So there are a lot of different things that you can do. The key things are, in my opinion, are this. Don't have an education be driven by the money. You know, just because you have so much money available for it at a certain point in time doesn't mean you have to spend all of it. You know, the average person who's successful in this country by far hasn't gone to Harvard or Yale. Those are good places, and they're schools that, you know, you can take advantage of if you have particular educational needs. But the average person does really well with a community college or a local four-year college, doesn't have to be a name college. I didn't go to a name college. And it's more your aptitude and the things you learn there. And if you go to a school that really wants you, rather than stretching for another school, that school is going to really pour themselves into you. So usually I tell people have realistic expectations for what you're going to be able to do. But also look at this money as kind of guiding some of that. As God provides for this, it gives you a framework for how much to spend on education. And I tend to believe that at 12 years old, I'd still diversify. You know, I wouldn't put all that money in the stock market. I would diversify that pretty broadly. Better to get a, you know, 5 or 6% return over 10 years pretty steadily. Than it is to have something going up 10% and 20% and down 30%. Volatility doesn't help in short time frames like that. It may help in the very, very long time frames, but when you're adding money every year, and there may be some development here, but I know with our grandkids, we just try to, recommend investments that are going to be broad-based, a lot of diversification, U.S. stocks, international bonds, gold, a little bit of everything. And see what God does with that.
Just curious, what is considered a long-term time frame versus? I think we always want to know, right? We're in for the long haul. Does that mean that's longer than 5 years? Apparently, if we got a college fund, so what would that be?
Yeah, if you listen to advisors, analysts on television, long term seems to be about 6 months. But
yeah,
and long term changes as you get older. When you're 60 years old, you know, 20 years suddenly is. What are my circumstances going to be then? But when you're in your 30s and your 40s and you're investing for your retirement, you do have a 20 or 30 year time frame. In a case like Nancy's, you're investing for this period of time for education. So you may have, a 10 year realistic time frame that you're going to invest and use that money up.
Okay. We'll come back, talk some more with Ken Franke in just a moment. Take your questions, your concerns. We're getting financial advice today from Ken, founder and president of the Kenneth Franke & Company, speaker, writer, and talking about biblical principles of finances with us today. And you can join the conversation as well at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Or if you want to drop us a note, you can just go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there. You can just submit your question. We'll get it right into the studio, and we'll talk more with Ken in just a couple minutes. Stay tuned. Talking biblical principles of finances today on Connecting Faith. Welcoming back Ken Franke, founder and president of Kenneth Franke & Company. They're a financial planning group out of Asheville, North Carolina. He's a certified financial planner. He was a founding board member and past chairman of Kingdom Advisors. He's been doing radio and media talking biblical principles of money for many years, and we always enjoy our time with Ken. And mentioned Kingdom Advisors because Diane's question, we can reference that, but she wants to know, she wasn't able to stay on the air, but she says, how can we find a person to meet on a one-on-one level to help us with our retirement portfolio, and what is the job title for that person? I think you can probably answer that one, Ken. Says, and how can I find an office in our area? And then she says, my husband and I have a portfolio that isn't the greatest, and we're at retirement age. And then she adds this, a sort of second part, says, We want to start honoring God or honoring our money and use it how God wants us to. Sometimes it feels like it's too late. So that's a couple-part question there, Ken.
Yeah, that's a great question, too. And that last part is perhaps the most important part, Neil. You know, when Diane talks about wanting to honor God with it, it's never too late to do that. God meets us where we are, and he knows what we've needed all along, you know, and guides us as we accumulate a little or a lot. And, you know, those biblical principles, just real quickly, are, you know, biblical principles always right, they're always relevant, and they're not going to change, you know, so you can, if you're grounded in that, you'll be in good shape. But here's how I would go about finding an advisor in any area of the country. There's two organizations that I would consider. One is Kingdom Advisors that you just mentioned. It's an organization that was founded in the mid-90s by Larry Burkett. He had asked six of his friends. I was privileged enough to be one of those to help him set that up. We've got over 4,000 members now. And the organization is designed, in fact, Ron Blue is our, we've hired Ron Blue to create our educational programs, and many of your listeners will have known of Ron. And we educate financial advisors around the country in brokerages firms and individual firms how to apply biblical principles to money, how to apply it to their practices, and how to apply it to their counsel. And if you go to kingdomadvisors.org, O-R-G, on the web, there's a link there where you can look for an advisor in your area. Now, there are all different types of people in Kingdom Advisors. There's over 4,000 members, and you know they're going to have different specialties. So you want to interview them and you know make sure that they fit the niche, you know, that you're really looking for. But they're going to apply biblical principles. They're going to apply God's truth to the counsel that they give. I generally recommend you also look for somebody not just in the investment side, but that somebody can look at your overall picture and fit the investments into that. Because you know if you get out of debt, you have plenty of margin, it's so much easier to invest than it is if you have a lot of debt and a high mortgage and little financial margin going into your retirement. So I would talk to somebody who would look at everything. There's also another organization, and you could find someone like that within Kingdom Advisors. There's another organization called NAPFA, N-A-P-F-A, National Association of Personal Financial Advisors. It's a fee-only association, and we belong to that. You're going to find only fee-only advisors, and most of them will emphasize financial planning. So between those two organizations, it'd be very unlikely, unless you live in a really tiny place, not to be able to find a financial advisor that would be able to help you. And many fee-only advisors are Christians also. So I suspect either one of those organizations will be able to direct you to Diane, to somebody who's going to be able to help with their finances and investing in the future.
And if they, you are a certified financial planner, a CFP, right? So should they?
It's a designation, yeah. And, you know, there are a number of designations. You know, the CPAs have different financial planning designations. I think the advantage of having somebody with a certain level of education, like a CFP, is that you know that they've been trained in looking at all the aspects of your finances that might be relevant, and they're trained in looking at the big picture. My experience is if you get the principles right and you get the big picture right, you rarely make mistakes on the fine distinctions between how much to invest here and how much to there and what to invest in. But if you don't get that big picture right, well, you can go completely astray with the investment side of it. So you really want that big picture to be looked at.
You know what, Diane's question, I guess, and your response was, you know, God's principles, biblical principles for managing money are always right and always relevant. I'm thinking, you know, there may be someone listening today that's not really familiar with what those are. I mean, could you just summarize what does that mean? I mean, if you were to say in a handful of sentences or statements, say, here's what the Bible has to say about handling money.
Yeah, I can tell you that pretty quickly. When you look through Scripture, and I encourage everybody to search this on your own, you know, it means so much more when you look up verses and study the Scripture yourself than when somebody just tells you to do it. But the Bible is replete with lessons, and I'll just give you one verse, but then I'll give you four core principles. You know, the Bible says that in the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil, but a foolish man devours all he has. And that's in Proverbs 21, I think it's verse 20. And I think that's profound for us, because our culture tells us to consume what we have. But the biblical-minded person doesn't do that. They live within their income. So here's what I call the core four, and that's live on less than you earn, avoid the use of debt, especially credit debt, build liquidity, things that you can actually buy or sell and have extra money around, and set long-term goals so you know where you're going. If you don't know where you're going, you know, it's the old story, it doesn't matter how you get there. But if you know where you're going, then you can take positive steps. And it may be different than your neighbors. It may be different from the analyst on TV. It may be different from the book that you read. If you know where you're going, what God's doing in your life, those goals are unique to you. And that's really important. And that can include, of course, you know, not only how much we spend, but how much we give, being generous. But the foundation of all of this, Neil, is really to operate out of faith and not out of fear. And not get worried about what's going on. You know, turn down all the noise from the world so you can focus on God and His principles and what He's doing in your life, so you can be about His business and not be distracted by the world's business.
Good insight from Ken Franke. Talking financial advice today, 877-93-FAITH is our phone number. Ken, we talked a little bit about investments and return on investments. You mentioned a little bit earlier about the number 5%. Is that something that we can expect maybe in terms of our retirement or stock accounts or something? What's normal today compared to maybe 20 years ago? Is there normal?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I made that up, by the way.
Okay. All right. So.
You know, I remember Larry Burkett used to say that in the coming economic earthquake, which I think was very early but prescient book, and in Whatever Happened to the American Dream, that he talked about, you know, if we were facing a really uncertain future, which we are today, that he would invest in as many different companies around the world, in the U.S. and outside, as many different bonds as you can around the world, because we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to fail or this. It comes right out of Ecclesiastes 11, you know, where it says give portions of 7 or 8 because you don't know what disaster may come upon the land. And it's not negative, because later on it says in there, you know, you plant your seed in the morning, you plant it in the evening, because you don't know if this one or that one's going to grow or if all of it's going to grow. But in, I think it's verse 5, five or 7, I forget which one, so forgive me that. But the reason you do it is not because we're worried about the economy or the president or Russia or anything that may get attention today. The reason we do it, the Ecclesiastes chapter 11 says, is you do it because we do not know what God is about. And I think that is the critical element in all of this. We have, and myself included, have so become accustomed to listening to secular advisors telling us to get in and get out of the market and accumulate as much money as you can. But if you know what, have a long-term plan, you know what God is doing in your life, you'll be able to invest much more wisely. And my experience is that if you just divide your money, for example, between real estate and U.S. stocks, international stocks and bonds, something like that, four ways, I'm just kind of making that real simple, and every year adjust that back and forth, you'll do better than most people who buy and hold a portfolio of stocks or a portfolio of any one thing, because any one thing can be volatile, and in no given year do we know which investment is going to work the best. So, you know, if you have stocks and they go up great, you sell some of that off and you put it into one of those four things that didn't do as well. And you just keep doing that year after year after year, and it's that consistency of that pattern that you implement in your life that's going to produce the result. And when you do that, you have the reasonable expectation that you will do better than the person who just kind of buys and holds a simple portfolio, whether it's the S&P 500 or whatever that is, by just having enough diversification and reallocating every year. And I don't think a 5 or 6% return over the next 15 years is an unrealistic thing. Is it realistic over the next 5 years? I have no idea.
Well, there we go. That I think that was as clear as we can get. But I am interested, Ken. I guess, you know, obviously this is your career and your calling, and you're giving us great advice and have been doing so for many years for your clients and others on air. But, you know, some of us maybe just aren't really paying that much attention. I mean, we've got a retirement account, but, you know, are we really looking at it carefully? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Should we see the statements, maybe it's quarterly or even monthly. It's like, well, it's just I don't understand it. And so Is it all right to just sort of let it set there if it's diversified and assume that it's you're wearing for the long haul? It'll work out fine.
Well, you know, when I do my taxes, I say I do them, but I don't really do them. My accountant does them because I'm not expert at that, and they're a little more complex than I think they ought to be, but they are. When I have an estate plan, and, you know, Pat and I just recently had ours updated, I go to an attorney. And I think if anybody that doesn't at least once sit down to make sure that the way they're investing is consistent with their savings, their job prospects, their ages, what their plans are for their life, if you don't sit down with somebody on the outside, if you don't have that certainty yourself, I think you're making a huge mistake. There's wisdom in the multitude of counselors. That's why there are people that are involved with Kingdom Advisors or NAPFA. Getting somebody's outside opinion to look in, take the emotion out of it, and give you just a real perspective on you do this and this could happen, you do that and that could happen, and if you live on this amount of money and save that, this could happen. It may give you a real vision of what God may do with your life and when you could be a little bit more independent to do more ministry work. But most people should not just let it sit on its own without getting some input in what the best way to do that over the long term is.
Ken Franke is founder and president of Kenneth Franke & Company. He's a speaker and writer, financial analyst and advisor, certified financial planner, member of the Financial Planning Association, the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, and Kingdom Advisors. And he was a founding board member and past chairman of Kingdom Advisors. He's been doing radio, teaching and speaking on biblical principles of finance for many years. We're honored to have him with us today. And our phone number is 877-933-2484. If you have a question about your portfolio or just any areas related to a biblical perspective on finances, 877-933-2484. In a moment, we'll get Ken's perspective a little bit on some of those maybe surprising costs that come to us in retirement, talk health care and other things. All that coming up in just a moment, and we'll take your questions as well at 877-93-FAITH. It's 47 past the hour. Talking to Ken Franke today, certified financial planner, getting some biblical insights on finances and stewardship. And Ken, one of the areas that we haven't talked on yet is those costs that we don't really know where the ceiling is on those, and think particularly healthcare costs and how they can really change our portfolio in a hurry. Is healthcare one of the kind of the big unknowns that we need to make some allowances for when we're trying to plan ahead?
Well, yeah, Neil, I could be clever and say, well, health is the big unknown.
Yeah, that's true.
Healthcare is just the cost of taking care of it. I don't think anybody understands where this is heading as far as the cost of healthcare. But, you know, and the Affordable Care Act gets a lot of blame for some of it. But I have to tell you that our healthcare problems today, as far as costs go well back before the Affordable Care Act was ever conceived, even during the Clinton years. A good example of this is housing. You know, look at how much money people borrowed for homes. They shouldn't have been borrowing. They borrowed too much on a home, and housing collapsed, and the prices collapsed because we were borrowing too much to buy homes. And, you know, and after World War II, you could, maybe you had a 7-year mortgage. Well, you get 30-year mortgages. Same thing with cars. Well, the point is the price of the homes were driven up by the ability to borrow money. If you couldn't borrow money, home prices would be a lot lower than they are today. Education costs would be a lot lower than they are today if the federal government did not encourage people to borrow and back not only mortgages but also back education loans. And the same thing is true with medicine. Because of the, $500 million we borrow every year to fund Medicaid and Medicare programs, we drive up the cost. When you borrow money, you artificially drive up the cost of any good that money pursues. And so the solution to all of this down the road is simply not to borrow as much. And one day, if we continue on the path we're going to go on, these things are going to implode, just like the housing market imploded. Education is going to change and adjust to that. And I believe healthcare one day will adjust to that too. It's not that it won't be available and it won't be good. Doctors are great. We have wonderful experience with so many doctors. But the cost of it is out of sight because of the borrowing. And as that borrowing tapers off at some time in the future or stops in the future, a lot of these prices and values are going to come back down and be more reasonable again. But absolutely, in the short term, that's a tremendous uncertainty. But none of us know what our lives are going to be like. Are we going to spend 5 years in a nursing facility, or are we going to have a heart attack and, you know, die on the street one day? We don't know that. And it's that uncertainty that necessitates we make some provision for it, both through insurance and, as you're older, Medicare and things like that, and through our savings. But, you know, again, it's like everything else. You want to be reasonable. We don't know exactly what's going to happen, and insurance is a useful thing, but you don't want it to wreck the rest of your life by paying just for that.
Well, that leads into a good question from Sharon. We got a couple of questions here in the next 8 minutes or so. Sharon has a question about life insurance policies. She's on line one. Go ahead, Sharon. You're on with Ken Franke.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Yes, my husband and I have some small life insurance policies,
uh-huh.
And we are wondering if it would be good to combine, the cash value or cash them in, or what should we do?
Okay. Well, Sharon, let me ask you two questions. One, this is what I get to do on the radio. How old are both of you? And what is the purpose of the policies?
Well, isn't it to pay for funeral expenses and to give to our children?
Well, it might be. Lots of times there's other things as well. And if you're 40 years old, you know, it's one thing. If you're 60 years old, or if you're 80 years old.
You're in 70s,
yep.
And 80s, okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's important to understand. I think, well, first of all, one of the things that I encourage people to think about is this. Sounds like you probably have grown children. And if they don't need the money, then what I would do is go to them and say, this is our situation. We have money to cover our funeral expenses and all of that. There may be something left over. If you would like that, we'd be happy for you to, you know, maybe pay for some of that if you can afford to do that. If they say, oh, yeah, that'd be great, you know, they'll take it over. Otherwise, they may say, you know, we really don't need that. We're doing really fine. If you just cover your funeral expenses, that'll be great. And then you go out and you find out what your funeral expenses are going to be, and you can decide how much insurance you really want to keep.
I never thought about that.
Okay.
I understand what you're saying, yeah.
Thank you, Sharon.
Sharon, it's really always trying to quantify what is my need and what are my resources in order to accomplish that. There may be enough cash value in those to meet the need, you know, if you've had them a long time, so that it isn't necessary to continue paying on a policy if you took the cash value out. You have to pay attention to the tax consequences of that. There may or may not be some. But those are things you can, if you talk to a really competent, independent insurance agent, they can tell you those options at this point in time. Because you get older and older and older, insurance can get pretty expensive. Even the policies we buy that are just for those burial expenses and things like that tend to be expensive policies to begin with. So somebody who's kind of independent and kind of give you assess what you may need and what you have and what your options are will help you make a really well-informed decision.
All right. We got time for one more call. Mary in Sioux Falls has a good question that maybe, Ken, you've dealt with a time or two. Mary, go ahead. You're on with Ken Franke.
Hi, Ken. The problem with my husband and I is we're not on the same page with investing our money. He wants to buy some real estate property all of a sudden. And he's looking at some property, and to me it seems dumpy, and there's 8 units, and I'm worried about renters and so forth. And then whereas I'm more like I want to give to ministries and help them, and so we just totally clash.
Yeah. Well, you know, I remember Larry Burkett used to say that the reason God puts two totally different people together is that if they were both identical, one would be useless. So, you know, I think very often he gives us, my wife and I have very different perspectives on different things. And what we seek to do is find common ground and figure that's where, you know, God's will is for us. I'll give you two principles, and I would encourage you to find somebody that can kind of sit down with you and walk through these. One of them is this, and I don't know, does your husband handle the money in the family normally, Mary?
No, I do. I pay the bills. He always looks at our investments, though.
Okay. Here's what I – so you're both engaged, though, and that's really valuable and important. What I have done is I always have this philosophy that I'm willing to miss out on something good that appears to be good in order to have my wife have peace and us have peace between us. I'd rather do that and miss out on something that could have been good than go ahead and not only not have peace, but maybe have it not turn out as good as we, you know, as I thought it would turn out. So I tend to defer to my wife, even when I don't believe that she knows as much about something as I might, because of her peace of mind is important to me. The second thing is, I really think it'd be important for your husband to sit down with somebody who could objectively look at the real estate investment, what it would entail, what the costs are, that type of thing. I know people that have done great in real estate, and I know people that have had horrible experiences, even when everything looked great and everything was perfect, and then the economy changed or just health changed, something unexpected happens. So I think it's really important to sit down with somebody who can recognize that you both have different opinions, try to find some common ground, but also look at realistically what could be expected with an investment in this. And maybe it's a matter of just toning it back down, and rather than doing several properties, do one property, or, you know, or those kinds of things. There may be other ways to do this than just one, and that's where somebody from the outside could really look at it and perhaps provide some counsel.
I only have about 2 minutes left, but Mary talked about, you know, wanting to be generous and give to support ministries.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe just say a word about the importance of keeping our generosity in focus.
Well, you know, to me, the most important, God doesn't need our money. Obviously, He uses our money and the way He's created the world. There are the people that need help from us. But giving, in my opinion, is always most important to the giver, because it releases, you know, when I hold my hand tight with my money tightly in it, you know, I want to hold on to that. But if I have my hand open so God can use it in wherever He directs, it gives me tremendous freedom. You know, I don't worry about it as much. It's His money. And I think that's an important perspective to have. And that's another thing that maybe a counselor or a financial advisor could work with both of them to try to balance both of those desires. So maybe there is a way to doing both things to a certain extent within their big picture. Maybe not as much as Mary would like or as much as he would like, but find some common ground that may just be the ground that God would have them walk down.
Ken Franke is the founder and president of Kenneth Franke & Company. And you can it's just franke.com, right, Ken?
Yes, franke.com.
And you can check that out. Or kingdomadvisors.org is another site you can look for some insight, some advice, maybe someone in your area. Ken, always good to talk with you, and we do appreciate your good, wise counsel. And it's just good to be reminded again that even the financial advisors don't know it all, right?
That's right. We sure don't. And Neil, we appreciate you so much. You do great interviews. And when you're coming to the mountains again, we look forward to getting together.
Looking forward to that a lot. Ken Franke and his wife live near Asheville, North Carolina. And he's a certified financial planner, a member of the Financial Planning Association. And he was the founding board and the past chairman of Kingdom Advisors. Been doing radio, giving biblical principles on finances for a number of years, way back since the mid-80s, and kind enough to join us today. If you missed part of today's program or want to pass it on to a friend, you can listen to the interviews. We put them up online after each show. Just go to myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page. You can catch the podcast there of these and other programs. So check it out, myfaithradio.com, and click on Connecting Faith. And thanks for listening to the program.